Mitzvah Shin Samech Beis. We're continuing in Mitzvah 362, which is the first mitzvah in the Sefer Chinuch's count in Sefer Bamidbar. And it's the mitzvah that you're supposed to send out people who are Tamei from the Beis HaMikdash. So we're going to start now where it says Mishor Shei HaMitzvah. Why should you send out Tamei people from the Beis HaMikdash? We did the first paragraph last time. Mishor Shei HaMitzvah Lefi She'inyan HaTumah Yadua L'Chachomim She'yachlish Koach HaNefesh HaSichlis V'Arbev Osa V'Yafrid Beina V'HaSeichel Yone HaSholem Usei Nifredes Ad Asher Titar. That when you have these things that the Torah declares Tomei, it's not a physical type of uncleanness, but rather it affects your mental state. So Tumah separates between yourself and God, which is why you're not allowed to go into the Beis HaMikdash to perform certain mitzvahs. For a Kohen, eat Truma, for example, the holy foods, while one is in a state of Tumah. And so you have to, until you become purified from your from this Tumah, so then your mind is considered to be somewhat separated from God. That you shall not become impurified through them, and you shall be impurified through them. So what does it mean? But it's interesting that this word, the second time, v'nitmei sem, is spelled without the aleph. The shoresh for impurity is normally, I mean, it is, tes mem aleph. So why did the Torah here leave out the word, the letter aleph? So, okay, simple understanding is because it's just not pronounced. So sometimes you leave out silent letters. Letters are not pronounced. Sometimes they're just not found in the orthography. But the chachamim, this by the way, is found by the impurity of a nevela when it talks about non-kosher foods. So this is how it's this line is found. Kilomar, so the chacham said v'darshu zecharon bracha v'nitmei sembam. Kilomar shemayonos haseichel mitamtemim batuma. The Gemara says that you shouldn't read that you should become impurified by them, but you should become stopped up. Venitam tem. You should become stopped up through it. So what the Sefer Chinuch here is applying over here is that when you're in a state of ritual impurity by through contact with a nevela or otherwise, so it is like a block between your spiritual existence and the God, which cannot be removed until you become purified, which is why you don't go into the Beis HaMikdash at this time.
Now, it's not that this person can make other people tamei by touching them.
You could in some situations.
Okay, because this is the strange thing, which is the mitzvah is, you know, that we should send them out, not basically say, you know, you cannot go into the basin,
There are two. There's a mitzvah zay and a los asay. Los asay is the next mitzvah. Oh, you're not supposed to go into the basin.
Okay, but there's an asay also. If somebody disregards...
But this is even if they don't touch anyone. There's nothing to do with touching. So okay. Even if you go into the basin, McDushin, you know, somebody says, "Hey, Joe, how are you doing?"
Yeah, okay.
You know, I don't shake. What do you mean? And that's Shomer Negiyah. I'm also the same gender as you, so no, I don't shake because I'm Tomei. So no, that would also apply just his being in the Beis HaMikdash and not specifically have to do with being Mitamei other people. But it's interesting that the classic usage of this drasha of Venitam Tem, Venitme sambam being without an aleph, so therefore it's closer to the shorish of nitam tembam, which would, it means the shorish of stopping up, is the classical idea. You know, it's not just a mystical thing. It's found in Chazal that this applies to non-kosher foods. Mm-hmm. That if you eat non-kosher food, this stops up your heart and can affect yourself spiritually. Eating non-kosher food not only is an independent sin, like, you know, if you don't put a fence on your roof or something like that, so you committed a sin, but nobody falls down, so and you don't. Okay, so it's just a regular sin; it doesn't affect your essence the same way. But here, if you eat something, yes, you put it inside your body. If you eat something that's not kosher, then it affects your very spirituality. It makes you less religious, less receptive to the mussar, to the messages that God is sending your way, which is why. That there were discussing this on Sukkot actually, mm-hmm. that people have this image of chassidim as being very machmir, being very stringent in their halachic observance, which is not really the case. That they have, you know, their things about dress. They didn't modernize their dress. But in regular rules of Shabbos and Taharas HaMishpacha, things like that, Hilchos Nida, they're regular. You know, they're not, sometimes they're more lenient than Misnagdim, either Yeshivish or centrist Orthodox, whatever. Sometimes they're more lenient. But one area where they do tend to adopt all the Chumras is in the area of Kashrus. They're very hesitant to be lenient about kashrus, about foods, because they take very seriously, not that we don't take this seriously, but they take particularly seriously the notion that if you eat anything that's tainted with being not kosher in terms of food, that it can adversely affect your spirituality. Yeah.
So this is why, say, for little children, you know, who are pucker, that, you know, if they go ahead and they, you know, they play with something which is muxer or something like that,
right,
you know, okay, that's
right,
not going to make me... But to have them eat something which is not kosher...
Correct. So Maker Adin, when regarding a young child, so you have the rule that you're not allowed to actively feed a young child non-kosher food or cause him to do any sin for that matter. If he does it on his own, a young child, you don't have to stop him. You don't have to stop him doing it until he gets to the age of chinuch, where he's already starting to understand that this is wrong and he shouldn't be doing it. Then you're supposed to start stopping him. But if a very young child eats non-kosher food, you don't have to stop him, but you're not allowed to feed him. But even though that is a technical halacha, it's already found in early sources that one should try to take care that even a young child should not find his way into non-kosher food, because non-kosher food is spiritually harmful in a way that other sins are not.
I'm not asking about when you become tummy, but I think it says something place explicitly, and I was wondering about that if you, I think, eat from an avela, and then maybe mikvah, but it seemed to be in a...
You mean it doesn't sound like it's such a big sin?
Right.
That's the point you're getting at. What's the two different inyanim? One is that it causes tumah, and one is that it's not kosher. If you eat, you know, there are other foods that are not kosher that if you eat them, so you're not tummy at all. If you eat tevel, untithed produce in Eretz Yisrael, even at a time where that's the rice, so you don't become tummy. You just, get malchus.
If you eat, let's say, from an avela, from something, from a non-kosher animal, let's make it someplace in the Torah it says, and it's really quite amazing, that the only thing you have to do, maybe it says you wash your body and what is assumed is mikvah, but it's not clearly stated.
Right. What do you mean the only thing you have to do? There's that plus repentance for the sin. That's not included in every single case when you commit a sin, so then you have to go to the mikveh and repent. Where that causes them? No, you're supposed to. That's a halach also. Let's say a man has relations with a woman while she's anida, so he also has to go to the mikveh. But there's also a sin involved. They're two different things. You have to repent and make vidui, repent and confess your sin and repent as well as go to the mikveh. They're two different things. One place is just talking about the tumah v'tahara, so it just says to go to the mikvah, and in other places it talks about the sin involved.
So in other words, just making yourself tamei, becoming tamei, you know, especially if it's like, you know, you're not going out of your way to do it or something like that, you know,
is mutter.
It happens all the time, you know, right? You know,
right. It's mutter to make yourself tamei if it doesn't involve a sin.
Yeah.
If you, you want to, you see a nevela, a carcass of a cow lying on the road, and you say, oh, that looks like
I'm
a really...
Like
no, you can't eat it, but you...
You want to get it out of the road, you know, it's a traffic hazard.
Right, that's a good good thinking. I was going to say that you wanted it for the leather. You wanted to say, that looks like a really nice hide on that cow, so I'm going to flay the cow, and I'm going to leave it in the middle of the road for the next person to move. Okay, no, fine, so you flay the cow, so now you're tummy, but that was mutter, that was allowed, you're just not allowed to eat it. Okay, so in terms of non-kosher food, so that's why, certain groups which are more mystically inclined, again, not that we should ignore this concept, but certain groups of Jews that are more mystically inclined tend to latch on to chumras more in the area of kashrus. And also that everyone should be careful that young children, as much as possible, should not eat non-kosher food, even though, strictly speaking, the halacha is that you're just not allowed to actively give it to them, because of this idea that it stops up your heart. So that's why, just to give an example, a famous example, so Lubavitch, the last Lubavitch, of the two rebbes ago, Lubavitch, the father-in-law of the last rebbe, said that he has a tradition that if you're not makbid on Chalav Yisrael, so then their particular timtum halev that's involved in eating milk that was produced by a non-Jew without Jewish supervision is that it affects your belief in God. So he said, so that's why Lubavitch is known as being particularly machmir regarding the halachas of Chalav Yisrael. So other chassidim, we're also very, not just chassidim, Hungarians, Germans, other people who are makbid on Chalav Yisrael. Everyone has to be makbid on Chalav Yisrael. The question is whether the regular milk in America can be considered Chalav Yisrael or not. That's why it's a little bit confusing that people who grow up in the modern centrist, whatever Orthodox community, and they know we don't keep Chalav Yisrael. We don't keep we're not makbid on milk to have supervision. So then you go to visit Saudi Arabia, and they pour you a cup of milk. So you say, "Oh, I'm allowed to drink milk." So there, Saudi Arabia is 100% usur for all Jews to drink the milk there, unless it was produced with Jewish supervision, because there's not government. Not only is there not government proper government supervision of the milk, but they produce a lot of camel's milk. That's where camel's milk there is pretty common. So it's the idea is that the milk in America and other countries where there's strict government supervision of the milk can qualify as Chalav Yisrael.
Is there any connection between sort of the mystical concern for Chalav Yisrael and not being allowed to have a non-Jewish wet nurse?
The Shulchan Aruch, it says, the Rama writes in Shulchan Aruch based on the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, that the milk of a non-Jewish woman, even though it's kosher, an adult is allowed to drink the milk of a non-Jewish woman, provided he's not, or he or she is not nursing directly, but if the milk was expressed into a vessel, the milk of an, and you want to use it to bake a par of dessert, that's 100% mutter regarding kashrus wise. But nevertheless, it says that a baby should not nurse from a non-Jewish wet nurse because the milk of a non-Jewish woman is spiritually harmful. Yeah, that's true. That is true.
We sort of assume, though, that it's the closeness to the non-Jewish wet nurse, somehow or other, that it's the emotional bond or something of that sort.
If you want to spin a more rational take on it, okay, that seems reasonable. Anyway, so what I was saying, so that... Other people who are makbid on Chalav Yisrael tend to live in large Jewish communities. So Samar Chassidim, of course, are makbid on Chalav Yisrael also. So they live in Brooklyn, they live in Kiryas Yoel. So there's no problem obtaining Chalav Yisrael milk in these places. But Lubavitch, again, I'm not saying Samar wouldn't be makbid on this if they were in a far-flung place, but I'm just noting particularly regarding Lubavitch. So you have Lubavitchers in Thailand. They run the Chabad house in these far Eastern Asian countries or in crazy places in America, in Wyoming, there's a Chabad house. So there's no Chalav Yisrael. There's no Chalav Yisrael there, so they don't drink milk, or they get they freeze milk and they manage to get it. Whatever, they go through very great lengths. So normally we even misnagdim in general. I'm not saying everyone. So Lithuanian, Polish, these types of misnagdim, even if you accept on yourself that even in America, you have to follow the stringency, and that you accept it on the practice in America that that you should have Jewish supervision on the milk even here in America. Most people in the category I just mentioned, the Polish, Lithuanian, etc., misnagdim, assume that that's only a stringency, that it's not absolutely halachically required, that as a matter of strict pure halacha, so the milk in where it's properly supervised by the government is permissible. So we would say, okay, so if we live in, people who want to adhere to the stringency, so they'd say, here, we live in New York, so there's plenty of real Chalav Yisrael, it's Jewish supervised milk available, so we'd rather buy that than the Goyish milk, even though we hold that the Goyish milk is Mikra Hadin okay? But if we were living in Wyoming, so we would buy the regular milk in Wyoming because the stringency is really appropriate when it's feasible. But when it's going to make you crazy and your kids aren't going to have milk for their cereal, so then you don't you're not makbid on it. But if you're but again if, in people who take the idea that Yunichal of Israel and meaning Jewish supervised milk even in America very seriously, such as Lubavitch. So then even if you're living in Wyoming, so then you don't
why
get the Goyish milk
Wyoming?
There.
Well, why not?
The Makar of the Jews in Wyoming. What do you mean?
You're assigned. You're host there.
The kids
don't. Mm-hmm. And also the Lubavitch that you said, mentioned once, I think that they hold that regular milk, stomach milk is of a tummy kaling.
That's true, yeah.
Yeah, which nobody else does.
Oh, my.
And nobody else does.
Okay, I'm sure somebody else does, but it's not generally,
I don't know. Regular chassidim? I don't know. Would Satmar Bells, would these people...
they wouldn't want to eat in the house where they,
Yeah.
They figured if you're going to eat, eat the...
You could eat fleishiks, I guess.
Yeah, right.
Good question. So somebody was telling me also, actually, once... that he had Lubavitch relatives, and he said, this person I was talking to said, mm-hmm. that he is makbid on Chalav Yisrael for milk, but not for butter.
Mm-hmm.
Because butter is more lenient, because you cannot physically make butter
from the milk
of a non-kosher, maybe with some chemical additives nowadays you could, but classically you couldn't make butter from non-kosher milk, so therefore that with a combination of Rav Moshe's idea that you don't need Jewish supervised milk at all in America. So he said he was comfortable using regular butter, even though he would prefer to have real Chalav Yisrael, Jewish supervised milk. So all his dishes had Chalav Yisrael except for the butter, and he said his Lubavitch relatives still wouldn't use it.
Mm-hmm.
Still wouldn't use it.
They wouldn't eat them?
They wouldn't eat food cooked in his milchik pots, which doesn't really make sense at all because the pots were no longer Ben Yomo, and there's no way they could have possibly ossered food. But whatever. Okay.
Whoa.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know what the Kalim policy of different Hasidic groups or other groups that are very, very serious about the Chalav Yisrael.
Kashrus, so.
Yeah. So, yeah.
I can't imagine that Lubavitch was in Nice during the war that Chalav Yisrael was available at the time.
I'm sure he didn't drink milk.
Mm-hmm.
You sure?
And especially nowadays, it's much easier. We have a lot of milk substitutes. You have soy milk and almond milk and flax milk and coconut milk, and you have all these par of milk. So it's much easier nowadays. And in those times, when you wanted a milk-like beverage, milk was basically all there was. So I'm sure that he did not drink milk at that time, unless he went to the cow and watched it and milked the cow himself. Okay. Okay, that was the only option in places where there was no Chalav Yisrael and people who wanted to be makbid on it. My grandmother-in-law is from Cincinnati, so she tells me how Reb Lazer Silver, who was the Rav of Cincinnati, how his wife used to go to the farm to watch the farmer milk the cows and then bring a small batch of milk home for her husband because... He was in Cincinnati. He was basically the only one who was makbid to have Jewish supervised milk, even in America.
Did he eat by other people?
No, Reb Lazer Silver separately. That has nothing to do with the milk. But Kayadua, so Reb Lazer Silver did not eat outside his own house. Period. Ever. Well, in those days, it was also a much bigger problem because, nowadays, pretty much so. The only problems that really come up in kashrus in people's houses, assuming they're really trying to keep kosher, is, basar b'challah, meat and milk shaylas that come up in the cooking. But in terms of the products you're buying, the situation is much, much better than it was in the olden days.
Have to look around carefully to find a reliable kosher butcher. There are all sorts of ones, very dubious ones, all over the place.
So nowadays, all the meat that's, unless the butcher is a complete crook and is substituting, like in the unfortunate story of Muncie, really substituting treif, so, all the slaughterhouses, Kimat, all the slaughterhouses are under the OU, so, again, some people don't like the OU for supervision for certain things, because the hashkafa, but no, I'm just saying that at least it's a reliable.
You said all the slaughterhouses are under OU.
All the meat in America is I believe that all the meat in America is under the OU, except for the meat that's locally slaughtered in Baltimore, which is under the Starkey.
Oh. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What do you mean all the meat? You
talk all the commercially cultured? Commercial. Yeah, yeah. No, not all the meat in the U.S.
Yeah.
I meant all the commercially produced kosher meat is. In America is under the OU or the Starkey. I mean, about 95% is the OU, and the remainder is a Starkey. So I mean, you don't have these things. Even if you don't certain things about that, either the supervision you might not like for some reason. Not saying I agree with that, but at least it's not totally hefker that it's really going to be shilas of being a novella or a trefa like it was in the olden days. So Reblazer Silver, yeah. So when he had to leave home, he used to pack up all his food from home. His wife used to can chicken for him.
That's
so,
Well, the old days he used to, after all, actually, one of the other problems was sometimes the meat wouldn't be koshered, and the housewives would, I had, the mother of a friend of mine in high school, whose parents kept kosher, right?
Yeah.
I came over there, I had a nice meal, and she said, oh, where do you get the meat? And then she said, of course, I don't bother going to all the soaking and salting stuff. You know, that's old-fashioned or something like that.
Yeah. And we have the opposite story. My grandfather-in-law, who was the rabbi in Dayton, Ohio, said that, most of his shul were not really observant. So he said one time one of his congregants invited him over for a Shabbos meal. So he said, to be fairly frank, I'm a little surprised you're asking. Do you really keep kosher? So the lady says, oh yes, Rabbi. When I buy my meat from the A&P, I'm sure to soak and salt it very properly. So that's what she remembered from her mother. That's what she brought the meat home
only
and so consulted.
America.
So, okay,
priceless.
Fine. That's a story about kashrus and being metamte malev. They're supposed to be extra careful with kashrus, perhaps even more than other mitzvos. Al kein b'mokom hakadosh v'atorah sheruach elokim sham ein roi lios bo ha'isha meluchlach betumah. So somebody who that's the manifestation of God's presence on earth. So somebody who is spiritually, mentally sullied with the ritual impurity should not go in because it's like a barrier between this person's mind and God. So if you go to visit Buckingham Palace, you don't go, after having just swum in the, what's it called?
Thames?
I'm going to say there's another place, what's it called? The Hyde Park, I think, that there's a very dirty lake where people like to go swimming. Anyway, you don't just go straight from there to go visit Buckingham Palace. It's not proper. You have to prepare yourself properly. So here too, so it's not appropriate to visit the Beis HaMikdash unless you're spiritually clean and you're prepared to receive the messages and the blessings that come from the Beis HaMikdash. Uchein Mashikosov, there's an example of this in Tanakh, of course. Ki ein lavo el shar ha-melech bilvush sak. So Mordechai refused to go to Achashverosh's palace because he was wearing sackcloth. So it's inappropriate to visit the palace even of an earthly king when you're not dressed, you're not prepared properly. So all the more so when you're dealing with the Beis HaMikdash, then we're talking about visiting God, so to speak, that you have to be prepared properly.
Black tie or white tie?
Midine ha-mitzvah, ma-shamer zichronon levracha, sha-mitzora hu chamor betumaso shemetamei be-ohel chamor gamkein b'shilucho. So the most stringent type of tuma is the mitzora. So the mitzora, he uses in Lashon over here, that he's metamei be-ohel. So is the mitzorah metami b'ohel? No, the mitzorah is not really metami b'ohel. Tuma b'ohel means that if you and the object that's tame are under the same roof, or if the object constitutes a roof over you, then you will become tame. That only applies to a dead body.
Yeah.
That if the dead body flies over your head and serves as a and goes over here and it serves as a tent, or you go over the dead body.
Body an airplane.
Someone throws it. I don't know.
You crawl under it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You could crawl under it, or you go over it.
Why
you go like this.
Yeah,
You go like this.
You go under a bridge, and then somebody, there's not got auto accident above you, or something like that, right?
If there's an auto accident on top of the bridge, I don't know. Then it wouldn't be under the same OHEL. But so that only applies to a dead body. So a mitzora does not have that. Does not happen if you go into the same house with a mitzora, then you're not mitame bohel. What it means is that I don't know why he doesn't say this exactly, but it means that if you go into a house that's a house with saras, then it's mitame bebia. If you enter the house, what's considered entering the house means if you enter the house and you stay for a certain period of time, which is the amount of time to eat a piece of bread. So, nevertheless, okay, so that is, since it has this thing where you don't even enter in, you don't enter, if you enter into it, you become tummy, so then it also is the most stringent regarding how far it has to be sent out. That it enters not only does it have to leave the Machane Shechina, the holiest encampment, which is the inner part of the Beis HaMikdash, or the Machane Leviya, the Levites' encampment, which in the translating into the Beis HaMikdash is the Har HaBayis, but even goes out of Machane Yisrael, the encampment of the entire Jewish people, meaning has to leave the city. So Yerushalayim is a somewhat of a manifestation of the holiness of the Beis HaMikdash. That the tumah, that the kedusha of the Beis HaMikdash is the kedusha of Machane Shechina, which is again goes down to Machane Leviya, then Machane Yisrael. So Yerushalayim represents Machane Yisrael. It's sort of part of the outskirts of the Beis HaMikdash, so to speak. That's why there was this once the state of Israel conquered the entire city of Yerushalayim in 1967. So the following Tisha B'Av, people were saying, how can we recite Nachem, the special prayer that we recite in Mincha of Tisha B'Av, because it talks about a destroyed, desolate city. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have the city. It's quite inhabited. It's quite built up. It's quite, quite nice.
It's under Jewish...
Right. So the idea is, so some people are saying, they should change the text of Nachem to represent the current reality. So Rav Soloveitchik, corresponding with his general approach that we don't make any liturgical changes whatsoever, didn't like any liturgical changes, so he said that no, that's not correct. We should not change the text of Nachem, because even though if you go to Yerushalayim, even nowadays in 2018, which is where it's much more built up than it was in 1967, if you look around, even though it's it seems like an inhabited, bustling city, nevertheless, with Torah and Tefillah and yeshivas and all these things, even so, halachically it's considered to be destroyed. Halachically it's considered to be destroyed, because Yerushalayim is only considered to be built when this Yerushalayim is Machane Yisrael. And without the Beis HaMikdash being built in Yerushalayim, Yerushalayim is halachically not built, because it doesn't constitute Machane Yisrael. So we felt there shouldn't be any changes. But here you have this idea that Yerushalayim really is an extension of the Beis HaMikdash. No, the Beis HaMikdash is not really, Yerushalayim does not have its full status. Okay. So the Mitzora you send out of Yerushalayim entirely. Vizavin, Vizavos, Venidos, Viyoldos, Shein Tumasam, Chamura Kolkach, Shilucham, Chutz Lishtei Machanos, Shein Machanos, Kohanim, Uleviim, Vizel Chutz Laharabayis. So people who have unusual emissions, whether male or female, or a menstruating woman, or a woman who has given birth before she goes to the mikvah, since it's not as severe, because they can metame other people through touching, so they go out only of the two machanos, the two encampments, meaning Machane Shechina, which is the inner part of the Beis HaMikdash, and Machane Leviya, which is the Har HaBayis, the entire Temple Mount. So that's okay, fine. V'tam utmei meis, and somebody who has just become tamei through contact with the dead body, shein tumaso chamura kolkach, einu mishtaleach elachutz l'machane achas. So somebody who has become tamei through contact with a dead body, it was not the actual source of Tumah himself, but rather just through contact with a dead body. So then he's sent out only from one of the encampments, meaning Machane Shechina, the inner part of the Beis HaMikdash. Ulefikach mutar likanes baharabaya. So somebody who's ritually impure due to contact with a dead body may enter Har HaBayis, is just not the inner part of the Beis HaMikdash, meaning the Azara, the courtyard, or, you know, the place where they slaughter the offerings and offer the offerings, and certainly not the place of the, well, only Kohanim really have to go in there, certainly not the place of the Beis HaMikdash building itself. This is why... Oh, one second. Umahi achumra bezovin yosu mitmei meis, shazav mitame mishka v'mosha avilu tachas o'evin mashein hameis mitame kein. So what's the difference? Why, excuse me, why halachically is our zovin, people who have emissions, considered to be more stringent than a tmei meis? So because they have mishka v'moshav, that if they... sit down on something, these types of people, so even if there's like a barrier in between, so even if there's like an intervening huge stone between the Zav and the chair, and they sit down on the stone, which is on top of the chair, so it's going to become Tomei's. That's why a Zav is considered to be more severe, in addition to the fact that it's the idea is that the tumah comes out from your very body, or the source of the tumah comes out from your very body, so that's also perhaps another level of rejection. What word am I looking for? Of not disgustingness, and not no, disgusting. Okay. It's just separation tumah. Yeah, fine. From the that should be separated from the Beis HaMikdash. That's why if you talk to people nowadays, there's a very big discussion in Eretz Yisrael, as to whether or not we should go on to Har HaBayis nowadays, whether such a thing is allowed or advisable. So you have people who say, probably the majority opinion, the opinion of the Rabbanut, most Haredi Rabbanim as well, say you can't be sure... Back up for a second. So technically, everybody agrees, it says right here in the Sefer Chinuch, that if you're only a Tmei Meis, mm-hmm. and you're not someone who's a Tumah Yotza Lav Migufo, mm-hmm. not someone who's having an emission, a bodily emission, so you're allowed to go onto Har HaBayis, it's just not the area where the Beis HaMikdash actually stood. So nowadays, in theory, according to everyone,
right.
it should be possible, since everyone is a Tmei Meis. The only way everyone's come into contact one way or another with a dead body, either by being under the same roof or by being on the Chevra Kedisha, whatever it is, so that... What?
Vast majority of college students, thank God, have probably never
no,
been.
No, you go to a Levi, go to a funeral.
Oh, all right, if you go.
Or a cemetery.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, sure.
Okay.
The only way not to be a Tmei Meis is to, you know, yeah, stay out of all these situations.
Funeral. Okay, you're right. You're
okay,
right.
But so the only way to remove the impurity of a Tmei Meis is through the ashes of the Para Aduma. So now we don't have any more. I mean, in theory, it's possible to make if you would find a cow that would hear the specifications.
And the guy would sell it to you.
But the mice, everyone is Tmei Meis, or virtually everyone. So
are you really Tomei if you visit a grave in a cemetery that doesn't include a closed
area? Yeah, because you walk on the grave.
I suppose you're careful to walk in the...
I don't think that's possible. You're not going to...
Yeah, there are roads...
Then no part of your body is going to go over any grave?
Oh, all right. Okay, you're walking along with your arm.
I don't think that...
I think at the cemetery in Beit Shemesh, they have it designed so that Kohanim can actually,
if you have a wide enough path...
Right.
Wide enough
that's
path.
There are areas where they can walk, without actually going off to the side world.
Right, but most people, when you go to visit a loved one's grave, you go right up to the grave and their grave's right next by, right nearby.
Yeah.
It's not going to be shaykh. So we assume that everyone is a Tmei Meis. So you're allowed to go on Har HaBayis, just not in the area where the Beis HaMikdash stood. And in terms of the other types of tumah, so that only requires going to the mikvah. So most people, if they haven't been, depends. So if you haven't been to a mikvah, so you could be subject to tumah yotzla migufo, that even if you didn't suffer an abnormal emission, but a woman is going to become a nida regularly up until a certain
it's not
age.
Abnormal.
No, it's not abnormal. That's what I'm saying. Yeah. A zav and a zava is abnormal.
Yeah.
So even if you're not a zav or a zava, and if a man has a seminal emission, which is also not abnormal, then you would need to make sure that you're free of these things, and you would need to immerse in a fully kosher mikvah. That a lot of times men's, what we call men's mikvos, which are just used for the idea, people who want to adhere to the Takanas Ezra, that you're supposed to have, you're supposed to, a man is, anyone, woman also, if a man has a seminal emission, women, it technically applies to women also, if they exude semen from having relations, but no women observe this nowadays, but there are some men who observe the Takanas Ezra, which technically doesn't apply anymore, which in the olden days, 2,000, you know, 3,000 years ago, whatever, not quite 3,000, 2,500, whatever years ago, required people, after having a seminal emission, to go to the mikvah before learning Torah or before davening. So that type of mikvah does not have to be a fully kosher mikvah. It could be just a regular tap water, or you fill it up with a bucket, a hole in the ground that you fill up with a bucket. So that is a kosher mikvah vis-a-vis Takanas Ezra. So a lot of men's mikvos, although some people prefer to have a fully kosher mikvah lechatchila for various reasons, even for when a man goes to a mikvah, but most men's mikvos are not, many men's mikvos are not 100% kosher mikvos. So if a man wants to go to Har HaBayis, so then he would have to immerse in a fully kosher mikvah that could be used even by a woman, and a woman would have to make sure that she's not subject to nida at that time, and she could, with theory, these people should, she has gone to the mikvah since her last nida period, and these types of people could technically go on Har HaBayis. So some people say, great, the more national religious rabbanim, so to speak, would say that we should dafka go on Har HaBayis. You want people should purify yourselves, themselves, and go on Har HaBayis to show, demonstrate the Jewish people's connection to and current sovereignty over, technical sovereignty over, Har HaBayis. Whereas other rabbanim, the official stance of the chief rabbinate, the most Haredi rabbanim, is that we're concerned, A, that people won't know how to purify themselves properly. You need to have a fully kosher immersion. That, you know, a woman, when she goes to the mikvah, is used to preparing herself properly by taking off anything that would be a barrier between her body and the water, whereas when most men go to the mikvah, you know, what the heck, you know, they take off their clothes and jump in. They don't really take too much time to try to make sure, try to double check. They're really free from all chatzitzos, from barriers between themselves and the waters. They would have to learn how to do that. Not that hard. Just have to pay close attention to it. They claim we're not actually sure 100% which areas are part of Har HaBayis and which are part of the actual Beis HaMikdash, and you're going to get confused and you're going to go into a not permissible area. So they said nobody should go onto Har HaBayis. Okay, but again, technically, according to Halacha, if you really know where the boundaries are and you really purify yourself properly, you are allowed to go on Har HaBayis. Okay, but this is the source for this, that people who are Tmei Meis are allowed to go on Har HaBayis. You just have to have a proper purification from a tuma that results from a bodily emission. Utmei Meis u'boali nidos v'chol ha'goyim derech klal, m'shalchen osa min ha'chel, aval tful yom nichnas l'sham. So these are derabbanan rules that they just made an extra separation. Or people who have had, hopefully accidentally, relations with the Nida, and non-Jews are only allowed to go up to the Chel, which is a certain, I'm sure Art Scroll has a beautiful diagram of exactly where the Chel was, which is, right, it's like a margin around the Beis HaMikdash complex proper, within the Har HaBayis. So on a Daraisa level, this doesn't apply. But the Chachamim said that these types of people should not go beyond the Chel, but a Tvul Yom, aval Tvul Yom Nichnas L'Sham, that somebody who went to the mikvah but did not have Harev Shemesh, to have the full purification, which is the nightfall following the immersion in the mikvah, he is allowed to go into the Chel. And one of my favorite archaeological findings is from the Beis HaMikdash complex, is they actually found signs in Greek, which was the lingua franca of the Middle East at the time, which were placed at the entrance to the Chiel, apparently, that weren't found there, I guess, saying Gentiles are not allowed past this point. Only Jews are allowed past this point, which is very, very interesting. Ezra's Yisrael, Ezra's Noshim, Mishalchim ena Tvul Yom, Avalo Mechuser Kippurim. And the Ezra's Yisrael, which is the area right in front of the Mizbeach, and the Ezra's Noshim, which is even farther out, the real courtyard of the Beis HaMikdash. So there, a Tvul Yom cannot go in. Somebody who did not have the full purification of the nightfall following the immersion in the mikvah, he can go in there. But not Mechuser Kippurim. Someone who's Mechuser Kippurim can go in there. So, for example, if someone's a Mitzora and they did the purification procedure, but they didn't give the Karbonos, that renders them completely Tahor and allowed to eat Karbonos. So they may not enter the Ezra's Nashim. Or if a woman gave birth and she also has to offer certain Karbonos, or if she's a Zava and she became healed and she has to give certain Karbonos, so if she goes to the mikvah before and she's ritually pure, but she still has some slight taint that's only removed by the offering of these sacrifices, and that's when she's allowed to start eating sacrificial meats, and that's when also when she's allowed to go in to the Beis HaMikdash.
Is there any order in which that should be done? The mikvah first or the sacrifice?
It's
first?
The mikvah first, yeah.
That makes sense.
Right, because especially after giving birth, so then the woman on a deraisa level, so a woman goes to the mikvah 7 days after giving birth to a boy and 14 days after giving birth to a girl, but she can't bring the karbanos that would render her not a mechuser kippurim anymore until 60 days after a boy and 80 days after a girl. Ume Ezra's, I'm sorry, 40 days. 40 days after a boy and 80 days after a girl. Ume Ezra's Yisrael v'lifnim afilu mechuser kippurim eino nichnas sham. And starting from the Ezra's Yisrael, starting from where they're starting, the area where they shechted the karbonos, so even someone who's lacking the bringing the proper karbonos doesn't go in. The Ezra Protea Mevarim Perik Avos HaTumah Shein Perik Rishon V'Seder Taros. It's the beginning of Seder Taros, the first Perik of Maseches Kelim. B'noeges Mitzvah Zo B'Zecharim U'Nekevos B'Chol Zman Sh'afilu B'Zman Hazeh Sh'amikdash Shomim B'Avonoseinu Asr Likones Botomei. That this applies for males and females all places and all times. I mean, it only applies in one place. I go back, not in all places. It only applies in one place, in Yerushalayim. Mm-hmm. But even though there is no Beis HaMikdash, the holiness of the area where the Beis HaMikdash once stood remains unchanged. So therefore, someone who's impure due to an emission may not enter the Har HaBayis, and someone who's a Tmei Meis may not enter the Beis HaMikdash area itself, even though the building and the Mizbeach are unfortunately no longer standing. The over alzev and nichnas b'mokom she'eno rashai ba'odo tomei b'tzadim she'pirashnu b'talasei. And if you did this and you entered an improper area when you're still tomei, then you neglected to perform a positive commandment. Bilvad she'over alav, you also violated a negative commandment, which we will now explain. K'moshin afarz b'seder alzev mitzvah shin samach gimel be'ezras Hashem. Let's just get a quick start on that. We're not going to be able to finish it probably, but okay. So this mitzvah is the lav, the negative commandment that was just referenced now. Mitzvah Shin Samach Gimel 363, Shelo Yikanes Tamei B'chol HaMikdash, that somebody who is impure should not enter the Beis HaMikdash. So before, remember, the last mitzvah was a positive commandment that we must send away people who are impure from the Beis HaMikdash. But here it says that there is a negative commandment that someone who's tamei may not enter the Beis HaMikdash. Shenimna kol tamei. Yeah.
The previous, you're supposed to send away, who exactly is the one who's supposed to send them away?
The Beis Din should ensure to it, and the person himself.
Oh, I see. Okay, so the person himself
sends himself away.
Okay, got it. Right.
Yeah. Shenimna kol tamei mehikanes b'chol hamikdash shedimyono ledoros kol hazara mishar nikenor velifnim Shutchilas Ezras Yisrael. So this applies to the Beis HaMikdash, which is the beginning of the Ezras Yisrael, which is the main part of the Beis HaMikdash. And the entrance to the Ezras Yisrael was called Shar Nicanor, Nicanor's gate, who donated the funds to build this gate. And you see, so if you make a donation to a Jewish building, so you see your name can, and you put your name on it, you know, your name can last the Lidore Doros forever. Now everyone remembers Nicanor because of his generosity towards the Beis HaMikdash. So you see, oftentimes, you know, when donations to Shul Building Fund, there's a plaque, you know, if it could say anonymous. So if you want your name to be, you never know. You know, if you, and you, people don't want to donate for a particular thing, they want to donate only a general fund of the shul so they can use it whatever they need. All these things are good. I'm not saying there's a mila to being anonymous. Also, it's a sign of anava and modesty. I'm not saying that. But if you put your name on a specific part of the shul, your name could last forever. Yeah.
Mr.
Yeah.
Totally get the modesty aspect. But
you have competing values here. One is modesty, and one is the preservation of your name. Yeah.
But it's not just the preservation of your name. It's setting an example. It's that, oh, she gave to that. Oh, well, maybe I should think about that. I really respect her, and if she thought that was a good cause.
Well, you say anonymous gave something, you know, that would also, you know.
No, but sometimes the personal. I actually just had an experience with somebody started a GoFundMe thing, which I'm personally connected to the people who did it. So I gave a fairly significant amount of money, and give you a chance to. Can share it on Facebook. Now, normally, I say, well, why would I share on Facebook? I hardly ever use Facebook. Well, if it gives a couple. And son of a gun, if somebody I know didn't chip in some money to this GoFundMe thing because he saw my name.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So, whatever, you know.
You're right. You have to decide. There are people.
Who is the Connor?
But you see, yeah, if you. A lot of donations in the Jewish community nowadays are, you know, plastered all over buildings. Okay, yeah, okay. Shenemar velo yitamu as machaneihem, they shall not impurify their encampment. Kilomer machane shchina. That's the actual Beis HaMikdash. Arayim yoze mikla lavin, mashamer zichrona lebracha begimara makis. How do you know that this is considered to be a negative commandment, i.e. something that is applicable in all places, all generations? Mashamer zichrona lebracha begimara makis, haba el hamikdash tamei, Chayev Karis. If you come into the Beis HaMikdash in a state of Tumah, so you're liable to the penalty of Karis. Ksiv Onesh, Ksiv Hazara. It says the penalty and it says the prohibition. Ksiv Onesh, Es Mikdash Hashem Timei, V'nichrisa. Since you impurified the temple of God, you should be cut off. So that's, it's a big, if you go on Har HaBayis nowadays and you walk into the wrong area, it could potentially be a Chayev Karis. So be very careful. Azhara, where does it state the prohibition? V'lo yitamu es machanehem. They shall not impurify their encampment. V'amr v'mechilta, gam kein tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'yishalchu min ha-machane ba'asei, minayin b'lo sasei, the halachic medrash. Right, so mechilta here, no mechilta normally refers to halachic medrash on Sefer Shmos, but here they're using it in an extended way. To refer also to the Sifri, which is the Lachik Medrash on Sefer Bamidbar. Gam kein tzavis b'nei Yisrael v'yishalchu min ha-machane. That's the asei. That's the positive commandment that we just discussed with the last mitzvah. Minayin belos asei. How do you know it applies to? It also constitutes a negative commandment, a prohibition. Tichsi v'lo yitamu as machanehem. So you have plenty of indications in the classical rabbinical literature that they consider this to be a negative commandment. B'nich belo amaniya. That it says in Sefer Vayikra that a woman who's just given birth should not come to the Beis HaMikdash. You should separate the Jewish people from their impurity. So maybe you shouldn't even go to the back of the Beis HaMikdash. No, it's only talking about if you actually enter. That it doesn't just apply to a woman who's given birth, but applies even to the rest of people who are suffering from an impurity.